ADP knows anything you hear, anything you don't hear, anything you kinda heard, anything you weren't supposed to hear and now have to pretend like you didn't, can change the world of work. From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Speaker Mike Johnson moves to renew so-called Section 702 surveillance authority, but some members of the House seem set to object as Donald Trump, in the meantime, calls for Republicans to derail the whole bill. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We are joined today by my colleagues, editorial board member Colin Levy and columnist Kim Strassel. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, is getting a renewal debate in the House this week, with particular focus on Section 702, this provision that lets the U.S. government collect communications from non-Americans overseas, though those communications might include messages to and from Americans. Let's listen first to Speaker Mike Johnson giving an argument in a press conference today about why he thinks this is important.
We don't want to be able to use or to lose Section 702 of FISA. It's a critically important piece of our intelligence and law enforcement in this country, because it allows us to continue killing Hamas terrorists. You have to stop the terrorists before they kill Americans. It allows us to track shipments of illicit chemicals used to make fentanyl. It allows us to protect U.S. warships from attacks by Houthi rebels. It allows us to stop China from stealing American intellectual property, and it prevents ransomware attacks against American companies. That's all the things that are empowered and allowed by this set of laws, this statute, and we can't allow that to expire or lapse.
Colin, let's start by going back to the basics. Can you remind us what is Section 702, how this works, and why it has become so controversial?
Section 702 basically allows the government to monitor the communications of foreigners overseas. And it does not collect information on Americans, but inevitably, because the foreigners overseas may have communications with Americans, all those communications are captured and stored in the database. That database can then be searched by U.S. intelligence officials for names or keywords, including the names of Americans whose communications, were inadvertently collected. But there's been so much misinformation about this issue. I think the important thing to understand is that this is a critical tool that the U.S. intelligence community can use against terrorism to monitor the communications of people overseas, who don't want the U.S. to know about things they're doing, whether that's terrorists, whether that's China. There's endless numbers of people at this point who don't wish the U.S. well. And it's one of the few remaining U.S. advantages in intelligence gathering. So, the fact that we're discussing unilaterally giving it up boggles the mind a bit. That said, the reason we're having this debate is because there have been some real problems with its use. And the bill that the House is now going to consider has been worked over for a lot of months to look at those problems. Some of the problems, by the way, are the fact that the FBI ran searches on the names of Americans in what appeared to be political intentions, like searching for January 6 protesters, searching for Black Lives Matter protesters, even searching names in a political campaign. Those are serious problems and serious mistakes. It should not happen. It should never happen. That's why the House is going back on this. And it's why the bill, I think, has been very carefully written, create new safeguards to prevent that kind of politicized spelunking through data by intelligence agents.
So these communications by non-Americans overseas are pulled into this database, which can then be later searched by law enforcement for U.S. persons. And there's a document about Section 702 from the Director of National Intelligence that provides some examples of when this might happen. And here are a few of them: using the name of a U.S. person hostage to cull through communications of the terrorist network that kidnapped her to pinpoint her location and condition, using the email address of a U.S. citizen, using the email address of a U.S. victim of a cyber attack to quickly identify the scope of malicious cyber activities, using the name of a government employee that has been approached by foreign spies to detect foreign espionage networks, using the name of a government official who will be traveling to identify any threats to that official by terrorists or other foreign adversaries. And so, Kim, I gather that part of the debate in the House is what kind of safeguards and how high the safeguards need to be on those kind of searches to allow this kind of necessary intelligence work that most people, I think, see the reason that it needs to happen while also deterring the kind of bad behavior that seems to have taken place within the FBI in the past.
Right. And just to understand what is being proposed to be changed, a couple of more details on how this works. So obviously, 702 is aimed at foreigners overseas, but as Colin very beautifully explained, sometimes it can incidentally collect U.S. information as well. What are we talking about? We're talking about phone calls, text messages, emails, and these are basically retrieved from telecommunications companies and internet providers like Google, et cetera. So it can be very, very thorough, and it's all sitting in this database. And right now, those that can access it, the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, and there are supposed to be some protocols if you're going to use it. You're supposed to provide a statement of fact if you're going to look at a U.S. official. But as Colin noted, this has not stopped some abuses of that database. So the bill envisions a couple of things that I think are really, really important. One is that now the FBI, if they're going to run these searches on U.S. persons, they must get approval from a supervisor or a staff attorney before running them. The bill would also prevent political appointees from approving FBI database queries. It would require audits of these U.S. person queries to be done within 180 days after the query. It's going to require that FBI personnel have annual training on these procedures and what is okay and what is not. And then it also has a safeguard that says that truly sensitive queries, and these are the ones that have ended up in the news, as Colin has noted, queries of elected officials or political or media organizations, they're going to need an approval from a deputy director. This is why I think this compromise is actually really good. If you look at some of these scandals of the past, it's that nobody was paying attention, people were getting away with things, and there were also really no consequences. And so what's good about here is the training part. Nobody can say anymore that they didn't understand how this worked. Let's say you're in some random field office in the FBI that isn't a headquarters, and you can say, well, we didn't get that. I mean, we didn't get that memo. No, you're going to have training. There's going to have to be documentation and sign off on this. So you're going to know who is doing it and for what purposes. There's going to be these audits to kick up problems, but mostly there are going to be penalties. There could be criminal penalties. If you actually willfully disclose information from this database, you could end up for 8 years in prison. This has been really important because, as we know, people have used some of this information and leaked it for political gain. Also, if you are engaged in unauthorized surveillance using that database in an unauthorized fashion, you could end up in jail for 10 years. So we're never entirely going to root out bad behavior, but it ought to give people some real confidence that there's going to be consequences if people are misusing these tools.
Hang tight. We'll be right back in a moment.
ADP knows anything you hear, anything you don't hear, anything you kind of heard, anything you weren't supposed to hear and now have to pretend like you didn't, can change the world of work. From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
Welcome back. Colin, what's your view on these reforms that lawmakers have worked to put into this FISA reauthorization? And what do you make of the idea that is being floated by, for example, Congressman Jim Jordan, that the better approach here is to add a warrant requirement for any search of this database for anybody that is a U.S. person?
Right, Cal. So I agree with Kim. You know, I think it's very important to recognize that this base bill, this compromise that was worked out between the House Intelligence and the House Judiciary Committee is really a very strong bill that makes just a ton of important reforms, both on the front end to create safeguards and prevent abuse, and then on the back end to run frequent audits of the law enforcement activity to make sure that the searches are not overstepping or violating the rights of Americans, and to create really good, strong criminal penalties that should make very clear to agents that this kind of behavior is not going to be tolerated in any form. And we've also, by the way, just as a side note, seen some evidence that the FBI is also making changes internally. You know, in March, the FBI came out with a Justice Department review that found that 98% of the FBI queries of the FISA database in 2023 were fully compliant with the rules. And it was actually even a higher percentage, 99%, when you took aside, you know, little mistakes that had sort of been made accidentally in the queries. And the overall number of the U.S. person queries has fallen hugely since these problems occurred. And in 2023, there were 2.9 million U.S. person searches, and that number has now fallen to about 57,000. So that's still a lot, but it's obviously a much different situation. Now, moving on importantly to the debate that we're having, because this is the big part about the warrant requirement. So the warrant requirement basically says that before any intelligence agency can run a query that searches for the names of Americans within the existing database, they have to go to a FISA court and get a warrant. And that's obviously just a huge problem for actually using this whole process in a way that can prevent terrorism in real time. I mean, you simply don't have time when you have some information to go to a court and say, we want to run this search. We think there might be a terror cell in New Jersey. Well, this has to be done fairly quickly. And now the people who are in favor of the warrant have made the point that they do have exceptions in there for emergency circumstances and that you can bypass the warrant requirement if it's an emergency. But the problem here is that we don't always know exactly when it's an emergency. The example that I like to think about is that, you know, you might have all of a sudden notice that there are, you know, 15 phone calls have suddenly come from Egypt to a house in New Jersey. And you don't know what they are. All you know is that there's a whole bunch of activity there. And it could be a terror cell, but also it could just be someone's birthday. And all of his family members from Egypt are calling from overseas. How do you actually prove that that is an emergency circumstance? You really can't. So that's the problem here. You have to be able to offer a certain amount of discretion to the judgment of law enforcement agents who know what they're looking for and know when patterns can be problematic.
And then after the fact, you can do the kind of oversight that Congress is talking about in this bill and the kind of accountability, Kim, if it's needed. And by the way, we know from what happened surrounding the FBI's intervention and the 2016 election that a warrant requirement is no guarantee that abuse will not happen also. And this bill, it seems to me, would put the kind of teeth into these safeguards that it seems were lacking in 2016.
Yeah, this is why I'm a fan of this bill or the compromise that had come up, because if we're going to go down the road of putting these very tough provisions in here that make it so difficult to run queries on incidentally collected American information, as Colin says, we're going to miss stuff. And I think the bigger point is that that is itself no guarantee, okay? People can lie in warrant applications. And how do we know that? Look at the Carter Page incident. The inspector general who put out his report on that those FISA applications against Carter Page was charitable and said that there were, you know, numerous omissions instead of, look, it was a lie. People went and they fiddled with the information to get the FISA court to agree to what they wanted to do. And the real problem, and why were they willing to do that, is because they understood that there would really be no penalties, no consequences for it. And so that's the way, and that's your best safeguard against this kind of behavior, is letting people know that there will be accountability, that people are watching, and that if you engage in bad practices, there is a threat of fines or going to jail. And I would wager a lot of Americans who watched the Russia collusion thing, that was their biggest frustration. Because in the end, these folks were caught. But people felt that there was no accountability and no justice in the end for what had been done. This is a bill designed to change that scenario, to try to safeguard against problems, but also to hold those to account who engage in bad behavior. Because if you're human, at some point, there are going to be people who break the rules. And, you know, I think it's important, the provision too. Congress is watching, people are now watching, and that alone has already affected FBI behavior. The number of these queries has significantly dropped because they're simply aware, even without this law in place now, that people are watching and that there's going to be a problem if they continue to abuse the system.
That is part of the argument that Mike Johnson is making to his colleagues in a Dear Colleague letter earlier this month. He said, had these safeguards been in place when President Trump was running for election in 2016, I'm confident the baseless attack against his campaign would never have been possible. With this bill's enactment, we are ensuring that can never happen again. But Colin, what do you make of the politics around this now? The expiration date for Section 702 authority right now is April 19, which is Friday of next week. And notable that today, President Trump has come out and said, kill FISA on his Truth Social platform. It was illegally used against me and many others. They spied on my campaign. That in all caps, as you can imagine. But Colin, I don't see any argument from him about what would take its place or that this intelligence against foreign adversaries is not needed or not useful. As often is the case, it comes down to personal grievance, it seems like.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, there's no actual path forward. But so frustrating here, Trump's comments, because it's a deliberate intention to confuse the issue. He comes out and says, this was illegally used against me and used to spy on my campaign. Well, okay, yeah, that's true. And guess what else? They did it with a warrant. I mean, that's what's getting so muddled up here in this discussion, as Kim was just saying, is that the Carter Page abuses have nothing to do with the issue about surveillance and the querying powers for American citizens in Section 702. Those are two completely different things. The House Republicans are objecting to querying the 702 database for the names of Americans without getting a warrant. Okay. But the issue that Donald Trump is talking about has nothing to do with that. The surveillance of Carter Page was done with a warrant. So putting a warrant requirement the way House Judiciary Committee Republicans want here would have no effect whatsoever on the surveillance of Carter Page, right? That's, as Kim was just saying, that was a lying issue. So there's no question it was abusive. There's no question it needs to be reformed. But that has nothing to do with the warrant requirement that they want to add here as an amendment. And just a bit further on the politics, I just feel like we have to understand this is a situation where you're basically pitting 80% of the rational people in the country who don't want a terrorist attack versus real extremes on both ends of the political spectrum. There's a reason why you have Matt Gaetz and Pramila Jayapal holding hands on this. If they're together in the same place, maybe that should be our clearest evidence yet that this is a bad idea.
Hang tight. We'll be right back after one more break.
Rapid expansion?
We're ready.
Worker shortage?
We're good.
Anything can change the world of work.
A celebrity buys the company.
Depends on who it is. But relax, we've got ADP.
From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Kim, what's your read of the politics around this? And do you suppose that this bill is going to get through the House one way or another with some kind of reforms in it for FISA?
Yeah, I'm concerned about this, especially now that Donald Trump has come out and said, kill it all. You've already had Matt Gaetz, one, come out and suggest he's going to move against a procedural vote that is coming along. And this comes in the middle of a lot of unhappiness and threats against Speaker Johnson, as we talked about in yesterday's podcast, from Marjorie Taylor Greene and other conservatives in the party who are still raw over the way the latest funding bills rolled out. And as we know, there has been threats from Marjorie Taylor Greene to hold another motion to vacate the chair. So there's always a worry that this could spill out into that speaker's situation as well, too. There has been a lot of conversation between the two sides on how to get this forward. I mean, the best way to do this, had some votes, hold the amendments. Hopefully people who believe in national security stick together and this moves forward. I think it's also helpful that there's a deadline, April 19th. And actually, this was all meant to expire at the end of the year, and they failed to hit that target. But they were lucky in that there were some other things being extended and they attached a short-term extension to it.
One last thought here is on the Fourth Amendment, which may be on some listeners' minds. The Fourth Amendment, of course, says that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And Colin, what do you make of the Fourth Amendment's role in this debate? To my mind, there's a couple things that jump out here. One is that if I am sending communications to somebody overseas who might be a member of Hamas, to take one example, and the U.S. government gets its hands on that piece of paper, to my mind, that's not my paper anymore. I've sent that over to the member of Hamas, and that's his paper. And so I'm not sure that I have a privacy right in that any longer. And then I believe there's also been some rulings on whether that counts as a search of me for the purposes of the Fourth Amendment.
Right. I mean, I think also in the amendment, I think reasonable is the key word. There's definitely certainly arguments here that these are reasonable searches. But you're correct. You know, the United States courts have repeatedly found that the Section 702 program is legally over about, you know, 15 years. I think there's about 8 independent federal judges on the FISC that have found the program reasonable under the Fourth Amendment every time the program was reviewed. And, you know, you also have several circuit courts that have found, as you say, that the incidental collection of a U.S. person's communications under 702 don't require a warrant and are reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. And to your point, exactly, we have to remember this was not a search of Americans. This was a search for foreign information overseas, and the U.S. person information was incidentally collected. That information is already possessed by the U.S. government, so doing a query on it does not represent an independent search, is what the courts have found.
Thank you, Colin and Kim. Thank you all for listening. You can email us at pwpodcast@wsj.com. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button, and we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.